Mr. Tyhurst, reel three. Did the Japanese make any sounds as they attacked?
At times they holler and shout. Perhaps there's half a dozen, but it makes it sound as though there's far more. They all seem to come in hollering and shouting. What they're shouting, I don't know, but they're hollering and shouting and so forth, and it makes it sound as though there's far more than there are. And also, at times, you're getting blown bugles. They seem to like to make a lot of noise when they're attacking you, whether it gives them courage or not, and they're trying to frighten you, I wouldn't like to know it.
Do you think the sounds that they made were effective?
Yes. Because, as I say, it makes it sound as though there's far more. I mean, you can't judge how many there are. You know they're attacking. They're hollering and shouting. And it sounds far worse than it is, if you like to put it that way. But, of course, you don't know how many there are, really. Because after the attack, everything is quiet. They can't, they're wounded away, and that's it.
Did you allow them to cart their wounded away?
Yes. We never, I mean, unless they were attacking, we weren't bothered with them, put it that way. The only time we were sort of really bothered was when they were putting an attack in. Apart from that, we were doing our own thing. I mean, we were trying to get a bit of food, trying to get a bit of sleep. But there was always somebody watching out. We always knew when something was going to happen. Because somebody would give a warning, there'd be shots fired over somewhere. Could be anywhere on the perimeter. It's on Blackpool anyway. But the other places, I never personally came face to face with any, apart from on one of the car parks. There was
what was a car park?
Well, it was just an area where they stopped in transit. They were coming down the road, perhaps a small group of them. We used to call it car park. It would be just an area where they stopped for a rest. They'd stopped there. One time there was some grain carriers and some 15 underweight British trucks. And they pulled in there. And we'd just crossed part of the road, actually. And, of course, we had to keep quiet. And then when things sort of settled down at night, several of the lads, well, there was a platoon, I think, went in there and scuppered them. And, I mean, we couldn't take prisoners no more than they could. Because if we took prisoners, we had to feed them. So, therefore, they went in and they'd kill whoever was there. There was no such thing as taking prisoners because they had to be carried with us and we just couldn't afford to do it.
But you weren't on that attack on that car park?
Not on that attack, no.
What was this other occasion when you had a brush with the Japanese apart from Blackpool?
Well, it was only on, we went into a village. And it was supposed to be a supply depot, only a small one, and that was where we went in. But as we went in, so the Japs, which a few that was there, turned tail and scarped into the jungle. We see them going out, and that was all. We never had any actual hand-to-hand fighting with them there. We got in there, and it was more or less a food dump. And that was destroyed, and on we went again.
What was your attitude towards the Japanese? Did you respect them, or hate them, or what?
Well, hate them, really, because, I mean, they never treated anybody properly. They were more animals. I mean, everything they reckoned was for their emperor, didn't they? And they were more like animals than human beings, I think. Well, I say animals are not like that at all. I mean, they don't kill like that, wantonly, do they? they were dreadful people. I mean, the different things, they never treated anybody with respect. Whether it was their upbringing, how they were, I don't know, but still now, I haven't got any time for Japanese. When people say about, you know, let live, forget, and so on, I couldn't, not with them. Not after the things they did to our prisoners and so on. I mean, they were dreadful people. I don't know about the younger generation, whether they're any better, but I hope they are. But in those days, I mean, they were beasts. They were not human, really.
Did you come across Japanese mistreatment of British prisoners?
Not myself, no. The only bit that I came across, as I say, was when they were chased out of the block, when you could hear the screams in the block of our wounded that weren't carted out. I mean, you knew full well what they were doing with them. They were, you know, bayoneting them and so forth. Another time we came out, I think it was a White City block we'd been in for a rest. And we came out, and the column is all single file. And each man is supposed to be in sight of the man in front. But at times it stretches a bit more. And at one time, they broke some Japs was by the side of the track, if you like. And they were smoking, and it was a ruse. And Julie Quick, quartermaster sergeant, he went up to the key, packed their smoking up, get in, and of course it was Japs, and they killed him with a sword. They cut him to pieces. Of course, then a big cry goes up, Jap in the column. They were killed, but I think it was Julie Quick and another one got killed in that scuffle. See, you weren't supposed to leave a gap. You had to keep close up all the time because, as I say, they could come into your column without you knowing it, and you'd assume it's your own chaps until they opened up on you. But that only happened once.
And that was at White City?
That was after White City. We'd come out from White City. We'd been in White City for a break. And we was on our way out. That was, and they were 41 column. We were 46. We were in the lead then. And that was in 41 column. And I suppose we must have been at least a mile away when it happened. But you could hear the screams of the, when they went, you know, use the sword. It's a frightening thing. It turns your tummy over.
Were those Japanese infiltrators killed?
Oh, they were killed. Yeah, they were killed.
Did you meet Wingate himself?
Before we went in, Wingate came round and met most of the men. How can I explain it? He was a strange man. He'd be sort of talking to you but looking at somebody else. But he was a genius. I think nearly every chindit would follow him anywhere. Because he was a man that he wouldn't ask you to do something he couldn't do himself. And he studied all this, and his idea was terrific. And if it hadn't been for him being killed, we would have been out sooner, and we wouldn't have had half the trouble. It was when he got killed, Len Tain took over, and he was a man that was fighting with his own shadow, in my opinion. And of course, he came under the command of Stilwell, and Stilwell hated the Lions, and that was how the Blackpool block was put on through him. As I said before, it was situated wrong. But that was to do with Lentain and Stilwell. But Wingate, if he'd been alive, he would never taken anything from Stillwell, and I think the Chindits would have still carried on, because they were disbanded in 45, as they were supposed to have gone in Rangoon and Malaya. But things went so well that they didn't need the jungle fighters. And of course, that was why the Chindits were disbanded in 45. But Wingate himself was a terrific man, I think. And I think majority of Chindits would tell you the same. They'd follow him anywhere, or would have done.
What about the local villagers in the jungle? Did you have much to do with them?
Not a great deal. Not a great deal. We didn't see many villagers because we naturally had to avoid all those sort of things, because if we was going into the villages and things like that, that'd give our positions away. And our object was to keep away from Jack. We didn't want to come into contact with him, because, I mean, he had like stronger forces than what we had. I mean, we were a guerrilla force, hit and run, keep out of the way. So the less he knew where we were, the better. Well, you couldn't trust all the villagers to keep quiet if they met you. I mean, because a lot of them were in cahoots with the Japs, naturally. So therefore, we could keep away as much as possible from the Japs, from the normal villagers.
You said that you picked up dysentery, but how, in general, did your health stand up in the jungle?
Well, the majority of us was suffering with things. I got dysentery. I had malaria, dysentery. There's a lot of the other lads suffering with different things, beriberi and what have you. And, of course, there was lack of food, lack of all sorts of it we had, I mean, because our diet was these cave rations. And where you're supposed to have 3 packs a day, which was breakfast, dinner, and supper, you'd be lucky if you had one to last all day. So that was a third of the intake of food, if you like, per day.
Sorry.
Well, the fatigue and that, I mean, with what you had to do, because you're still going to keep marching and so forth and so on. And it was hard going. You weren't getting enough food to counteract all these different diseases and so on. You had your mepocrine tablets, which you had to take. And then when I got dysentery, I was having sulfaguanidine tablets to try and control it. And understand my sanitation was bad. I mean, with myself, how I was. If I dropped out the column, they wouldn't wait for you. They keep going, because you're only one. So half the time, if I had any intake of food, it'd go right through me. That was it. It went through me on the march. And then it wasn't until we got near a stream or something like that that we started to go through that I could cleanse myself. And of course, that doesn't help at all, does it? You're not only filth and so on, lack of food, it was pretty grim. I mean, you still got to keep going. You didn't drop out the column, because if you drop out the column, you've had it. You're left. Understandably, they can't wait for you. You can't hold a column up just for a couple of men dropping out. But fortunately, as I say, I got flown out, went down the river on a raft, through the Chinese lines, to American Base Hospital at, I think it was Michinar. And then was flown out into India. And I was in hospital and convalescent for 3 months. And I went back to join the unit in Murray. And from there, we were supposed to have gone back in, but then they were disbanded, and we went on internal security units in Cawnpore in India.
Just coming back to the Chindits, you were in 46 Column, mm-hmm. and you were also in the 2nd King's Own Royal Regiment. Did the 2nd KORR comprise the whole of 46 Column?
No. 46 Column, yes. 46 and 41 Column. That was the whole battalion, the 2nd Battalion of the King's Own Royal Regiment. It was split in two.
To form the two columns?
That was the two columns. 46 was one half, 41 was the other half. So that was the whole battalion split in two.
And who was in charge of 46 Column?
Lieutenant Colonel Thompson. He was the CO of the whole battalion. Who was in charge of 41 Column? I'm not sure whether it was Royal or Heap. Colonel Royal, or Major Heap, and Major Royal, I think it was. But I'm not sure whether they were in charge of 41 or not. Naturally, I joined the King's Own just prior to this, so the colonel of the regiment I knew, and he was colonel of 46 Column. He was in charge of 46 Column. But who was in charge of 41 Column, I don't know. Because we were like two separate units. We weren't always together on the march. One had put on an ambush, the other one an actor's floater. When I say floater is, we control the area around so that the Japs don't come in and catch the ones that are on ambush. The floater column acts as a cover for them. So it could be either 46 or 41.
Which NCO were you usually under in the jungle?
You're under your section NCO, which the one that was with us was a Corporal Apps. He got killed. He got killed coming out the block. He was a Corporal Apps. You had a full corporal was in charge of your section, and then you had like a platoon sergeant, platoon officer. The platoon officer was Lieutenant Harrison. He was a Royal Artilleryman, but he volunteered for the unit, but he still retained his own regiment, although he was in the force. He didn't have a photograph of him, actually. Carrying a stretcher was after the block. I had a photograph here, which my pal sent me. It was because we was in number one platoon. He sent me a photograph of Lieutenant, or at least a photocopy of Lieutenant Harrison and four of our other chaps that was carried with one of our wounded on the stretcher.
Are you proud to have been a Chindit?
Most certainly. Yeah, I'm extremely proud. And, how can I put it, I'm proud to be part of that expedition, although we had it hard, it's great, but of course we're not appreciated at all by the younger generation. At least I don't think so. Because half of the younger generation don't know, if you mention Chindits, they don't know who they are. All they seem to think about today is the European campaign, isn't it? Although, I must say, after this PJ effort, we can't call ourselves a forgotten army anymore, I don't think, because we were certainly done proud.
Now, you said you went on to this internal security duty in Cawnpore. What do you remember about that, please? What did you do?
Well, all that, actually, when we went there, prior to, we came from Murray down to Cawnpore on internal security duties, and at that time, they had an effort called LEAP, which is Leave in Advance of Python. Now, Python was the repatriation home. I was fortunate enough to apply and get this Leave in Advance of Python. I came home to England. Well, I came from Cawnpore to Karachi, boarded a Sterling bomber at Karachi, flew to Tel Aviv, and we got off. We had a day there. We boarded another Sterling, and on takeoff, we crashed. And there was 8 of us out of the 28 that were fit for the journey. There's 4 killed, and the others were all injured.
Were you injured?
I was burnt, that was all. I was not seriously, but I was burnt. And a strange thing, I had a greatcoat on. And prior to knowing I'm coming home on leave, I had my suit specially tailored so that I looked extra smart coming home. And on the plane, I had a greatcoat on. And the plane just naturally caught fire. And it was ablaze, and we were scrambling to get out. And when we got into the sort of rest room, if you like, where we had to go, I undid my greatcoat, which wasn't burnt at all. But when I undid my greatcoat, all the front of my uniform was all scorched, and it was just charred and just broke away. Yet the greatcoat wasn't touched. I was burnt on the nose and the ears, on my face a little bit, and my hands, but nothing much. I continued the journey then until we came over on the Liberator. Then, going back, I should have gone back just before Christmas of 45. It was December 45. I think it was when I was in November, December. But we went, the Sloan Square was the air trooping depot. When I went back up there, I was tipped off to report sick and say that I refused to go back by air. I had to go and see the MO there, and I was given a sea passage, anxiety neurosis. Because when the sea trooping depot was Marylebone Hotel. We went to Marylebone Hotel, two of us, and we got there about 2 o'clock. And that morning a draft had gone down on the boat and we were the only two there. They kept us there for a week and then they sent us home for another fortnight's leave. So, in all, I had 6 weeks leave in England, and I went back on the 27th of December, straight down to Southampton on the boat, and back out there again. And when I got back out, I was on MT at that time, I was Motor Transport and Headquarters Sector Company. I went to report in the MT office. And they said, oh, you're going up to Royal Appendy on a vehicle mechanics course. So I went then straight away, well, I was in camp for about 3 days, and went off to Royal Appendy on a vehicle mechanics course. And I was up there for 3 months. Came back, and of course then I went into workshops in Cawnpore. And that was where I stayed till I came home to England.
But when you were on the earlier internal security duties, what did that amount to?
Well, I was on MT, so of course it didn't, but in the rifle companies, I was headquarter company because I was motor transport. But in the rifle companies, what it entailed was the riots that were going on, they used to have to go and sort of quell the rioters. And their training was to form the old British Square. And the officers and the justice of the peace would be in the centre of the square. And the training being that if they wanted one of the rioters shot or quelled in some way, the JP would say, that man is the ringleader. I want him shot to be wounded. The officer then detail one man to fire at that man to wound. Now, if he shot and killed him, he was on a charge. It's ridiculous. But that's how it was. And if he shot the man next to him, by mistake, he's on a charge. He had to do that one man and shoot to wound or shoot to kill. That was the training. Of course, we never actually, as far as I know, got into any situation like that. But that was all in the training, and which had to be carried out in the training. You picked one man out, which the JP said. The officer detailed a man to do it, and that was it. Or if it's like you had to go in to arrest him, they detailed two or three men to go in to grab that man and arrest him. And they had to do that. And they mustn't use any force. At one time, we went to Lucknow, from Cawnpore to Lucknow, to pick up some jeeps. And on the way back, we were stoned by rioters, these gandywallers, as they called themselves, and one of the jeeps overturned and injured our fella, the driver. But we couldn't do anything about it. We had rifles, but we had no ammunition. So you couldn't use them. You weren't allowed to shoot them. Not unless you were detailed to. Which, typical British idiocy, isn't it?
But that incident was at Lucknow.
That was between Lucknow and Cawnpore. Because we used to have to go in there. We used to, every day, there was a 1500 weight truck went from Cawnpore to the SSO's office in Lucknow. And that always was a driver and a guard. And the guard had a rifle, but he had no ammunition. So, I mean, it was useless. He wasn't allowed to take ammunition. He had a rifle. So if they said about you, I mean, that was it. Unfortunately, nothing ever happened, only that once, when we picked up the jeeps.
But you were on that yourself?
I was on that myself, picking up the jeeps. There were six jeeps. We went and picked up six jeeps from Lucknow and came back. And as I say, we were stoned on the way back.
Was that 44 or 45?
That's 45.
How big a group of gandywallers were there?
About 30 or 40.